comes in. I believe that's, if I butchered her name, I apologize. Comes into this fight on Tuesday night as a plus 1,000 underdog walking into this fight against... she fought another woman in the flyweight division. I can't see her full name here. Something Clark.
Shannon.
Shannon Clark. Shannon Clark. And she just flatlines her in the first round with one of the most perfect overhand rights I think I've ever seen. I think the most explosive and just craziest knockout I think I've ever seen in any of the women's divisions before, especially a flyweight fighter.
I mean, a plus 1,000 dog is like the most insane, particularly for a women's fight, as you pointed out, Zach. You were actually the one that told me about it. I hadn't even seen it. Both women were undefeated going into this last round, and almost like Khabib did to Conor, the fake to takedown defense. You see the hands drop, and they just hit them with the nuke up top. Perfectly placed punch on the chin. I mean, like, the rotation of the fist, it was perfect. You saw Dana's reaction.
Perfect.
He wasn't wearing his normal
attire.
Yeah. His normal attire. Everybody knows about Dana and his black shirt, but you know what? That's what he lives for. Like, you just saw the elation on his face, and that's really what we love to see. Yeah.
And he's standing cage side, screaming at her. Yanessi doesn't speak English. She speaks Spanish, but Dana's still yelling at her, "You're in the UFC. You don't even have to go to the back. Forget all that. You're in." And I think that's just kind of, that's what the Contender Series is made for, moments like that. These underdogs coming in who get their chance finally to shine, to prove what they are and get their claim to the UFC. And I mean, there's not a better way to do it besides knocking your opponent unconscious for 5+ minutes.
Forever.
I mean,
forever.
Perfectly placed overhand, right? And she, like you mentioned, fakes the takedown, set that up skillfully, and had the power to do it. I just feel like that's not power we see very often, really ever,
in
the women's flyweight division.
It's so interesting in the places you find, like future UFC champs, and I say that with obviously a grain of salt, but like, if you have the ability to land up, like, I see a star in you. Like, I don't mind things like a Cody Brundage versus Bo Nickel, because who knows, maybe Cody Brundage can't beat Bo Nickel. Obviously not, but maybe he can, and that's what you live for. You live for the underdog to come alive and really to steal your heart and just become a fight hero.
Yeah. It's a sport where one shot changes everything, but I don't think that this was necessarily just a lucky shot. I think just watching this entire fight for as long as it lasted, Yanessi seemed to be getting the better of her on the feet, was mixing up the strikes really well, was setting up to the body a little bit, maybe getting Shannon Clark's hands a little bit lower, and then comes in, fakes a takedown, and shoots that overhand right over the top, and it lands flush. And Shannon Clark coming into this was, as you mentioned, also undefeated. She was coming off a nasty bulldog choke in her first, or in her previous fight. Mm-hmm. So it's a game opponent. It wasn't like she was fighting a nobody. As mentioned before, she was a plus 1,000 underdog. Shannon Clark coming in was a minus 1,800. And Yanessi is now in the UFC. And speaking of other walk-off KOs, Malcolm Wellmaker the week previous knocked out Adam Bromhold with a first round, I want to say, right hand. The right hands have been on fire this season in the Contender Series. Sends his opponent to the mat with a walk-off KO. Immediately, I mean, everybody knew immediately, Dana's out of his seat, losing his mind.
Yeah, fun.
Everyone knows who's getting a contract. He is also in the UFC, another name to look out for because the striking that night looked incredible.
And he's a big, what is he, bantamweight? 135?
I believe so.
Oh, he's huge, like 5'10", 5'11", good size. And most importantly, he's a switch hitter. That's power in both hands. Undefeated up to this point, 2 wins in the submission, 4 wins by TKO or knockout. He's going to be dangerous in that division. I want to see how he does against guys who are naturally smaller. Maybe they'll be a bit quicker, but if he's able to put on a striking clinic, he's going to be a big, big name in that division coming up.
No, definitely. And bantamweight, as we've talked about in recent times, is a division that is on fire right now. A lot of promising talent in bantamweight. The top 5 alone are just pure killers. And adding Malcolm Wellmaker to the equation now, I mean, he's 30 years old coming into the UFC.
A little older.
So I'd like to see him getting active pretty soon. He took no damage in that fight. And as exciting as it was, and if he can continue to put on a show like that in the UFC, I think he can make a name for himself pretty soon, especially in a bantamweight division.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty, pretty fun. I mean, the natural counter-punching ability of him, just, like, the strike was going backwards. So he's a guy that could, and not a lot of fighters could do that fight while going backwards. They're usually the aggressor, especially if they're as big as a Wellmaker. But he's shown the ability to fight forward and backwards. He's going to be exciting.
Another guy who likes to throw counter strikes moving backwards, Sean O'Malley, who's going to be fighting next week, the current champion of bantamweight. So yes, maybe a little bit of a comparison there. I don't want to say they're alike, but that shot looked a little Sean O'Malley-esque. So maybe that kind of prototype is kind of catching on now. Guys who can counter strike while moving backwards and still deliver power.
I would say that he has to see what Marab's about, but Marab is slowly losing his mind, ladies and gentlemen.
Man, crazy.
And it may be that staph infection on his arm that's going to his brain.
Yeah. allegedly staph infection. That's the internet looking at pictures and diagnosing fighters with stuff just through social media.
Are you a doctor?
The clearest thing. But they've done it before in the past with Benoit Saint Denis. Could it be this time? But before we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. Yeah. That's for next week. For next week's episode. No, you're good.
I'm sorry.
Because I'm also excited because next week we're gonna have Jack Warner on, and yes, that's gonna be his pound for pound debut. So very excited for that episode. Looking forward to a little bit of a plug for next week. But before we get to next week, we've got UFC Fight Night with Sean Brady taking on the returning Gilbert Burns. And this is a fight that I'm excited for. I'm always excited to see Gilbert Burns in the octagon. We were talking about it earlier how we kind of used to have these aspirations for Gilbert Burns in terms of being a championship-level fighter and maybe not panning out in his UFC career thus far. But this week he will draw in Sean Brady. But before we get to that, Steve Garcia is back in action, making a quick turnaround. He's going to be taking on Kyle Nelson on the main card of UFC Vegas. Steve Garcia coming in, of course, riding a four-fight knockout streak, one of the longest active streaks in the UFC. I believe he's tied with somebody else. I'm not sure.
Off the top of my head, I cannot remember.
I can't remember off the top of my head, but I do know he is currently tied for the lead in terms of the knockout streak. Mm-hmm. In his last time out, he fought Sang-woo Choi and made quick work of him. And it seems like he's starting to kind of piece things together now. The Jackson Wink fighter, obviously we know that gym, known for producing some great, great fighters. So could Steve Garcia be kind of this next iteration of Jackson Wink fighters making a name for himself?
I mean, if you talk about it, he certainly seems to be trending that way. The last time he lost, it was directly prior to his 4-fight win streak, and he got starched. I believe that was his was that his debut in the UFC? It may have been one or two or third fight in the UFC, but since then, he's been on an absolute tear. You see what he did tonight, just Sang-woo Choi, but Shay, if I'm saying this name incorrectly, please, I apologize, Shaylianne Nurdanbek. I mean, and what he did to Sang-woo Choi was an absolute first round battering. So he has legit fight ending power in his hands, both of his hands, and he's a guy who's he's not looking to go backwards. He's not fighting on the back foot. He's fighting on the front foot. He's gonna sit on his shots and he'll exchange in the fire. Mm-hmm. Kyle Nelson, I mean, in the UFC, he's just a tough. And, like, we talk about the tough fighters in the UFC. Like, Dan Hooker, we love his attitude. We loved how Tony Ferguson was crazy. Kyle Nelson's kind of like that at the featherweight division. They kind of have that, like, edge to them. And I believe he's also produced a 4-fight win streak, if I'm not mistaken, too. So a lot riding on this. His three.
One is last three. And then one draw in his last four.
So a draw as well. So 3-0-1, looking to make it 4-0-1. His last fight was against Bill Algeo in March. That was an early stoppage. He got that win there. So a lot of implications there. I'm excited for this fight. I want to say I'm going with Steve Garcia. I know it's a 3-round affair. I think he gets better as the fight goes on. I think he takes it via a split decision. I don't know if you knock out a guy like Kyle Nelson. That's the only reason why I'm going decision here.
I think that's interesting. I'm going to side with you in terms of taking Steve Garcia in this one, but I do kind of want to go with, I gotta ride the momentum. I got to ride the wave. 4 straight knockouts. Why not make it 5 tonight? Or not tonight, but Saturday night. Why not make it 5? And it just seems like when he goes into the octagon now, he has a lot of confidence in himself, a lot of confidence in his hands, especially being able to stand in the pocket with a guy like Choi it like he did in his last fight. Guy who's been thought as is dangerous and very powerful. Guy who's put other guys out. Steve Garcia didn't fear the moment. He went into it and he applied his own pressure. And I feel like that forward pressure has become too much for some people. I see him going in on this one and getting another finish. I think we can get another Steve Garcia knockout. Riding a lot of momentum, didn't take really any damage in that last fight, making this turnaround. And I think this is a highly motivated Steve Garcia coming in now at 32 years old. It's time to start getting in the rankings. And if he can get past a Kyle Nelson this weekend, I can only imagine that a ranked fight is up next for him.
Kyle Nelson, 33 years of age. I mean, like, he is a guy who absorbs a lot of damage. So I could see why you say he knocks this guy out. But it's almost like a opposite reaction because of the fact that he takes so much damage. I think he's callous to the point. It says here he absorbs 4.69 significant strikes per minute, but he has a striking defense that's above 50%. So I think he's going to be used to that. I don't know if you're going to be able to put out a guy that's already, maybe it's an adverse reaction. Like, some people react differently to it. Maybe because he takes so much strikes, maybe he's used to it. But either way, I'm going to have to go with Steve Garcia either way, regardless.
I'm going to side with you, man. I'm going to say Steve Garcia.
I wouldn't be surprised by a knockout.
Another guy fighting out of New Mexico. Always exciting to see a fellow New Mexican 100%. Fighting in the UFC, especially when they're on fire like that. So I got to ride with him. Steve Garcia is going to be our pick for the week. But moving on, Jessica Andrade. At this point, can we call Andrade a legend of women's MMA?
You know, it's not aesthetically. Sure. I'm not going to argue.
Some of the knockouts, man, over the years have been... She's one of the best in terms of being a knockout artist, I feel.
Throwing
like.
Hope a lot of the times, not aiming fire, as Izzy would say. I would say a lot of it's just like...
Just throwing and hoping.
Throwing and hoping, but...
But she can't be doing that this weekend because she draws a very, very game Natalia Silva, who has been surging. Oof. I believe she is riding... I almost want to say an 11 or 10 fight win streak. She has not lost since December of 2017.
You would be correct, sir.
And, I mean, what a streak for her going forward now. She's in her UFC career now. She's got 5 wins, 2 by knockout.
Yep.
And every time she's fought, I feel like she's gotten better and better and better. Her speed has gotten better each time. She's 27 years old, still on the younger side. And it just seems like she's very confident in the hand. She's confident in standing in the pocket. She's confident with trading because defensively she's very sound. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned before, she's very, very fast in her strikes, and she's a big volume puncher.
Yeah.
She throws in bunches. And I feel like that forward pressure being in Andrade's face like that with the volume and defensive ability of Natalia Silva, I just feel like it's going to be a little too much for Andrade to handle, especially with Andrade, you know, kind of her style just kind of especially recently just being – just throwing hope. And I feel like that volume of Natalia Silva, the ability to move around the octagon and being able to evade strikes such and such, I think she's just a better fighter at this point.
I mean,
career.
The first 5 fights in the UFC, and do you remember the spinning KO kick? I believe it was Teresa Bleda. Like, I went back and I watched that, and I was like, oh my God. And with that, she's definitely given herself a shot, like, as a real, real contender in the flyweight division. Jessica Andrade, again, I don't want to say it gets the job done because that's not completely fair to her, but it's a lot of things that are, a lot has been left to be desired. And when you're facing as slick as a fighter, because I think that's a fair assessment, like Natalia Silva, that just comes down to counterpunching. Like, she's going to be able to sit in the pocket with you, trade shots, and then as soon as you make a mistake, it's going to be there for her to just capitalize on. You look at the resume of Jessica Andrade. Yeah, Marina Rodriguez, Mackenzie Dern. But we were watching that Marina Rodriguez fight together. Marina Rodriguez didn't really impress me, and Mackenzie Dern not either. But Natalia Silva is one that I look at and I'm going, yeah, this fighter is way too technical and defensively sound. Like, you can't touch her.
Yeah.
I don't think you'll be able to. I don't think just relying on your power per se is going to get it done here for Jessica Andrade.
I agree. And I mean, if you want to bring out MMA math here, you mentioned the win over Marina Rodriguez.
Yeah.
Natalia Silva's last loss in December of 2017 was against Marina Rodriguez.
Yeah.
Far before they were both in the UFC. It was in another promotion called Thunder Fight. But a long time ago, Natalia Silva has improved a lot since then. And as I mentioned, she's gotten better and better in each fight. And I feel like at this point, she's starting to make herself a name in that top of that division of women's flyweight and could potentially be becoming a real contender very soon. I know that Andrade has kind of been known as a gatekeeper in that division. And if you can beat Andrade, you can beat the upper, or you can fight against the upper echelon of that women's flyweight division.
Yeah, former
exactly.
Champ.
So getting through Andrade here, Natalia Silva sets herself up very nicely in that top of that division, potentially coming for getting a bigger fight soon, especially if you pull away this one.
It's going to be a nice
event.
It will be a nice week because Jessica Andrade has basically fought across all three divisions. Who hasn't she fought? Like, she's fought everyone practically that there is to fight. Like, I mean, if for Natalie Silva, this is yours, and I believe you're a minus 300 favorite in this fight. So, I mean, this is really your fight to lose.
Exactly. I fully agree. I think Natalia Silva just goes in there and she gets it done. I think she pieces up Andrade. I don't think Andrade lands anything significant.
Unless she catches her.
She can catch her. It's MMA. It's a crazy sport. Anything could happen. One punch can change everything.
Yes, it can.
But I just don't think Andrade finds it this weekend.
Me neither. No. Just no.
No. But moving on, Gilbert Burns, I mentioned, back in action, taking on Sean Brady. This is an interesting matchup because I feel like Gilbert Burns has had such an up and down career from the highs and the lows. One of the lows now coming off of a loss to Bilal with the injury. He had a very active year, though, before fighting Bilal. And then, of course, his last one, fighting against JDM, won every round of that fight, I believe, up until he got caught with that knee. JDM starts piecing him up, gets nervous, panic shoots, and JDM catches him flush with the knee and ends up knocking him out. A bad knockout for Gilbert Burns. But he's making his return, finally. That was in March. Maybe would have liked to see him take a little bit more time off, but regardless, he is taking on Sean Brady this weekend. How are you feeling? How are you looking at this matchup?
Let me say this first. Here at Pound for Pound, I love you, Bilal Muhammad. I love you. I will ride for you because both of these guys lost to Bilal. Ladies and gentlemen, remember the name indeed. But I would say as it connects to Bilal.
I think Brady, sorry, just to interrupt you. I think Brady is one of Bilal's rare finishes.
Yeah. Yeah, he is.
He knocked him out while he was still standing.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, I mopped the floor with him. And then, but that was expected. I would say between the two, I would say I expected Sean Brady to lose more to Bilal than I did Gilbert Burns. But Gilbert Burns, what is the state with him? Like, he's a guy that I saw not in the Khamzat fight, like you said, but in the Kamaru fight where he lost because they were training partners. I was like, this guy's going to be champion one day. And maybe it was more so because of his heart and the fighter spirit that he displayed rather than his actual skill. But then you could turn around and say the Khamzat fight, a lot of people had him win that fight. So combine those two and what do you have? Not a champion, not someone who I thought was going to be a champion. I thought he had it in him, but one of the better gatekeepers, as you say, Zach, like I don't know where he goes from here, especially when you're the 160 dog down to a Sean Brady, who's a guy I believe who could go into this fight and ultimately win. I think he's going to be able to push the pace extremely well against an older veteran seasoned fighter. And I think he's just going to check him. I think Gilbert Burns is in danger of getting knocked out here. I really, really do.
I mean, coming off of the knockout loss earlier this year, Burns has just been very, very active lately. And yeah. I don't know if it's necessarily to his benefit. It seems to, at least last year in 2023, at first, it was looking good because he beats Neil Magny.
Yeah.
Three fights within, I believe it was like a span of 4 months.
Yeah.
He goes in, he beats Magny, he beats Masvidal, and then he turns around back-to-back pay-per-views. I believe whoever was supposed to fight in that co-main event, I can't remember who it was now, but both guys stepped in on short notice, Bilal and Gilbert Burns. Burns turning around from a fight the previous month.
Yeah.
And he dislocates his shoulder immediately and loses that fight. He ends up fighting to a decision still with Bilal.
It was a well enough.
But with the massive shoulder injury. Yeah. Yes, I agree with you. Gilbert Burns has the heart, and I believe he still does have that fighting heart.
Yeah.
I just don't know if the finishing potential in terms of winning for him is still there because he's had very good performances. He just can't finish them.
Mm-hmm.
He performs well against JDM, one of the top guys of this division. A lot of people are afraid of fighting JDM at this point.
Knee.
And he lands and knee. Goes right into the right knee. The he end. Had it up until that moment, and it was just because, I don't know if he gassed out or what happened, but JDM eventually starts catching. JDM starts picking up the pace. The he starts building momentum.
I think it's
and
mistakes.
Just the mistakes pile up, and then it just seemed like he's just panicked and just shot into that.
38
right into that
years
knee.
Of age yep. right now. He just turned 38. Sean Brady's maybe 31. Like, I will say maybe the jiu-jitsu could come into the play into this one.
But Sean Brady is also a great jiu-jitsu player.
I mean, but
three subs in his last five.
But I'd be, but we're talking about, we're talking
but we're
about.
Talking about I,
Gilbert
I
Burns, BJJ is like, but like, if this fight's on the feet, like Brady's just going to have more success. Like, I don't know how many different places that a Gilbert Burns could take it where, because again, Sean Brady's excellent at BJJ. I think Gilbert Burns is better, but I don't know where he could take it to this point with so much, I guess, baggage, like the injuries and just the inability. Like he has so much, he can't finish fights. He gets injured a lot in those fights. Mm-hmm. He's old. Like, where do you go if you're Gilbert Burns? You don't have enough stuff in your repertoire and you have no upside. I think mm-hmm. that's the word I'm looking for. So it's going to have to be Sean Brady for me. I don't know what you do exactly if you're Gilbert Burns.
The younger contender coming into this fight, and welterweight, another division where it seems to be a line forming for the title shot. Top of that division is very heavy, and yeah. if you want to make your name known, you got to take on Gilbert Burns. And as you said earlier, I've said it before the episode, Burns, one of the best gatekeepers, I think, in the UFC. Yeah. And if there's anyone who's more game to fight anyone anywhere, it's Gilbert Burns. He still has that fighting heart, but I just don't see him beating a Sean Brady in his current form. I just think that loss to JDM was a really big one for him, especially with how brutal of a knockout it was. And then losing the previous one to Bilal with the injury, I just think that he's at a point where he's not necessarily fighting healthy. He's trying to stay active. He's kind of nearing the end of his career now at age 38. What more is left in the tank for Gilbert Burns? You're taking on a very hungry contender in Sean Brady this weekend. I just don't know if he still has. I don't know if he still has the hunger to be in the top of that welterweight division.
You saw him cry in that Kamaru fight, and there's usually two ways it goes with that. This guy's either going to rise from the ashes, or he's going to fall. And what we've seen from Gilbert Burns, try as he might, he's fallen a lot. And I think another loss to a guy like JDM, it's done it again. I think it's broken for the second time, and it's really buried him. But I do have a quick question for you, Sean Brady. He goes out, he beats Gilbert Burns, as we both predict here. But that doesn't give him an immediate title shot against a guy who already beat him. And you talk about welterweight. That's a line. Like, Leon's still in the mix. We still talk about Kamaru Usman, Shavkat, Kamza. Like, what happens with Sean Brady? Where does he go? If it's you, Zach, if you're playing matchmaker.
I'm looking at the rankings right
That's
now.
That's what I'm trying to figure out.
It's hard to justify. I mean, definitely not justifying a title shot because, I mean, he's one of Bilal's rare finishes. I mean, I just don't think you can.
Yeah, remember the
KO'd
name.
By, remember. I don't think you get KO'd by Bilal and get an immediate title shot against him, a rematch, especially with how top-heavy this division is. But Gilbert Burns is currently sitting at number 6, Sean Brady sitting at number 8, Ian Machado Gary sitting at 7.
Oh,
he beats
yes.
a Gilbert Burns. All of a sudden, he's at a point where he's jumping even Ian Machado Gary.
Okay.
And That's the nice. Rest of that division goes Kamaru, Shavkat, JDM, Colby Covington.
Oh
I think
oh, the last
if I'm
going
to play matchmaker in this one and Colby? I want to do a title eliminator. No, not Colby.
JDM.
If I'm doing a title eliminator, I'm going to go JDM, Sean Brady. I think that's another matchup that interests me. It's a guy in JDM who is mainly a striker, but taking on a guy like Sean Brady who can also grapple, I feel like is a good test before taking on a Bilal Muhammad who... With much improved in striking, I will admit, Bilal did improve his striking.
Remember.
And the grappling, I mean, we know it's good.
Yeah.
And then you got to, if they do end up doing the Bilal and Shavkat fight, you're going to be taking on either guy who knows how to grapple. I think the whole top of this division are incredible grapplers. So
yes.
you want to get a good number one contender match, a title eliminator, if you want to call it. I think Sean Brady, JDM, is the fight to make after this.
I think that's the way to go,
but
too.
He's got to get past Gilbert Burns first.
Yes, he does.
And, you know, Gilbert Burns has fraud-checked a lot of contenders.
Yes, he has.
I almost want to say he fraud-checked Kamza a little bit. Even though Kamza beats him, Gilbert Burns gave him a hell of a fight, and he had him genuinely scared at one point. It's a wonder. Sorry to cut you off. Yeah. It is a wonder he did not knock him out with that one shot in the second round where he had Khamzat wobbling all over the octagon. I can't believe he didn't knock him out with that.
Special.
Any other human would have been out with that perfect hook that landed right on the chin of Khamzat and couldn't do it there. If he would have done it, who knows? Gilbert Burns may have gotten another title shot.
I mean, that fight's so much fun because I remember when they're like both on the ground and he hits him with a foot to the chest and the whole crowd goes crazy. That's I love you, Gilbert Burns. I really, really do.
Gilbert Burns we know. I wouldn't be surprised if he won this weekend. I just got to go with the younger, hungrier contender, I believe. And I just think that Sean Brady kind of beats everyone else in this division except maybe, I don't want to say he goes in there and beats the top five. But anyone outside the top five, I think Sean Brady can beat.
Okay. I do agree with that.
I think he can be up there in that top five. And I think that in terms of getting past the gatekeeper, which is Gilbert Burns, I think that he can finally pass this test.
And he can elevate his name there. I agree.
But he's got to do it first, man. You can't look past him. Can't look past the Gilbert Burns. But for fight night, that's about it. Ooh. But before we wrap up this episode, we do have some Israel Adesanya news getting into a little bit of a road rage incident in, I believe, in Auckland, in his hometown. Little interesting there. I mean, I see the video and Izzy's arguing with a guy outside of, I don't know where he's at, but he's arguing with a guy on the side of the street, and this guy's flexing at Izzy. He's talking in his face. Israel Adesanya, obviously very distraught, yelling back some profanities back to him, flipping him off, such and such. And right as the guy who's recording drives off, you see Izzy start to approach the guy yelling at him, come on, I hope you tried to. I dare you.
I mean, if it's me, like there's three guys, particularly in the UFC, that if I saw, I'm never going to. Like Bo Nickel is just like, I don't know why. Because if his name is Bo Nickel. Like that's just
he's also built like a brick.
Yeah, he's built like a brick. All-American wrestler. John Jones, because he's just he has a very psychopathic. Like, I don't know if you watch John Jones interviews, but he has a very monotone, like sociopath. Yeah. I'm so sorry. Like sociopath, psychopath, like demeanor about him. And then you have like Khamzat. Like those are the three guys that I'm not doing.
But Marab? You saw Marab go into the crowd recently to fight or not fight, but
just to confront a fan. I think it's a size thing. That's the thing. Because I don't know.
If I had area to move, I don't feel like I'd be nervous. If there was a wall near me or a cage and he can hold me up against it, like how he fights, I'd maybe be nervous. I don't know. I don't feel like I'd take much damage. Like I feel like he's just going to hold me against the wall.
Yeah.
Marab Dvalishvili style.
But Izzy's not one either. That's a 6'4".
He is not one
four.
You play with. That is a 6'4" middleweight.
No. No, thank you. I wouldn't do it. Some people are brave, man. The dude was wearing Crocs. As you
not even in sports mode either, man. You got to put the Crocs in sports mode if you want to try to fight an ex-UFC champion.
Like, what are you doing? Some people are brave. You think he was paid to do that? Maybe.
I don't know. Some people just have the nerve, apparently. And this guy had a bone to pick with Izzy, and I don't know what started it. Or I don't want to make anything up here or assume anything, but who knows? Who knows what could have happened? Maybe the guy came up to Izzy just yelling at him and not a fan of him. And after the DDP loss, I mean, I'm sure Izzy's feelings are a little bit sore after that. Could have sparked something up there. Who knows how this started, but
what did the MMA guru say about this? Did he get commentary on this or no?
We've been talking about guru a lot lately off camera.
Shout out to guru.
I don't know. I haven't seen it yet. I'm sure it's not positive because guru is not an Israel Adesanya fan.
Okay, but...
But interesting developments in the MMA world. But we finally get that Sphere card next week. Oof. Very excited. Jack Warner will be on the show with us. That's going to be a great time. Looking forward to that.
Yep.
But that'll just about do it for today's episode of Pound for Pound. It was a fun one. You know, fight night coming up this Saturday. Gilbert Burns getting ready to throw down. I can always get behind that. But that'll do it for today's episode. I've been Zach Cordova, alongside my incredible incredible co-host, Mahdi Dembele. Our producer for this episode was Trey Rodriguez. I'm sorry, totally wrong name. Producer, that's my producer for this weekend with World One-on-One. Time. We are, I am off it. My bad. Our producer this week, Luis Andrade. I totally apologize to you and Luis. I am terrible with names. We're horrible. We are horrible at Pound for Pound. What a closing for us today. Andrew, we miss you. But that'll do it for today's episode. Thank you for tuning in for Pound for Pound. We'll see you next time.